Thanks, guys. So thank you for that introduction, Judy. So today I'm going to be talking to you a little bit about DevOps and Agile, all right? Bringing these guys together. We're also going to be talking a little bit about some product and executive or leadership type coaching, just to tie everything together. But I want you to keep an open mind. We're not going to get into a lot of the details, so I'm not going to mire you down with CI/CD pipelines or Scrum methodologies or anything. We're going to keep it very high level. We're going to talk about how to build a very valuable business chain or supply chain within your organization that includes everyone to be able to provide multiplicative returns on the investment. So I hope that each and every find something valuable out of this talk today. Love to talk to you afterwards. I'm going to allot a few minutes at the end for Q&A. So getting started, today I'm going to talk a little bit about what this journey is going to look like. So in every time that you learn something, every time you experience something, you need to look at it like it's a journey, right? We're going on this adventure. Destination isn't as important. It's what we learn when we get there, because sometimes we find that as we take journeys in lives, that our destination ends up being somewhere entirely different, right? So we're going to start off with talking about transformation, because transformation is hard. How many of you are currently in a transformation of some sort within your organizations? A lot of us are. Then we're going to go into understanding some of the deeper challenges that Agile and DevOps have. You know, how they're competitive in the market, how they work together, but why they're not blending as well as we'd like to see them blend together. Then we're going to discuss a very short amount of the gotchas that bind us, you know, those challenges that you're going to encounter in that transformation journey of working together. Then we're going to talk about a new approach. It's just to take on what I've learned over the last 10 to 12 years of doing transformations for businesses and working with all of the different departments and areas of the organization. And then we're going to discuss and break out in each one using this new approach, what it brings to the table, what we should look at, what areas we're going to find the most value, and how they overlap with each other. And then finally, we're going to bridge this to a business outcome, because at the end of the day, we all know it's about the outcomes. We want to see what it is that we're going to be able to go back immediately and actually deliver value within our business. And then I'll leave you with a few key takeaways, and we'll have a Q&A session. So if you have questions about anything that you've seen here today or just in general about your transformation journey, I'd love to hear your feedback or your input. So getting started. Transformation is hard, right? So too many times I hear about DevOps and everyone says, hey, man, we're going to start automating everything. We're going to build CI/CD pipelines. We're going to be able to deliver 1,000 things a day, and we're just going to go fast. We're going to leave everyone else behind. And then from the Agile side, I hear, you know, we're going to start doing iterations, and we're going to start adopting a framework, whether it's Scrum, Less, Dad, SAS, SAFe, insert model here, and we're going to start doing iterations and just start delivering software, right? And everyone is, they've got their own value proposition. Right? And then too many times the organizations are transforming, but the unfortunate part is their people aren't aligned to the mission, the vision, the purpose of the organization. And if you have no idea on how you're delivering value to the organization you work for, you're absolutely clueless in how your company is delivering value to its customers. So it ends up the workers that are doing work over here aren't really connected to the planners, right? So when we talk about that business versus IT. So then these are the most dangerous silos you have to look for within your organization, right? It's not the Agile, it's not the DevOps, it's not the individual development teams. It's the opposite sides of the business, right? You know, IT running off and doing whatever they want to do and business being left behind, or business making their own planning and dictating what IT needs to do. The silo breakdowns have to start there first, and then we can dive deeper into that. You know, at the end of the day, think of it like this. We're in an outcome-oriented economy. Businesses are spending money on the promise that a company can deliver a specific outcome. We don't care about output anymore. It's not how many hours is this going to take for this project to be done. We want the project to be done and done in the way that's going to be valuable to the customers, right? So when you look at this guy up here at the top, it says, hey, you know, how to spoil the change stew? Right, a lot of the times we've got all these ingredients. Every different part of the business wants to sit at the table. They want to add their ingredient to the pot. But when we forget that purpose, we lose our mission, we lose our vision, we lose our value, and the stew's never going to turn out really great. So we talk about understanding the deeper challenge between DevOps and Agile. These are two emerging frameworks that have been around for a long time. Last year, DevOps finally hit, or this year, I believe, DevOps finally hit their 10-year anniversary. That's pretty significant. It's been out there that long, and there are still companies that have yet to adopt it. Same thing for Agile. Agile's been around 15-plus years, And it's been well known. It has a lot of practitioners, and there are still companies out there that haven't adopted Agile, right? And here are a lot of, you know, what I find interesting is I look on the internet to try to see how people view DevOps and Agile and product management and, you know, all of these different parts of the business, and I see this a lot, where it's DevOps versus Agile, or ITIL versus Agile, or, you know, Agile's been a big pot stirrer for a very long time, because, you know, what we fail to realize sometimes is Agile and DevOps brings a lot to the table. And how many of you have got an ITIL V3 or later certification? How many of you have got your ITIL V4 or started studying for your ITIL V4? So what you're going to find, and all of you can already attest to, is that now DevOps and Agile have a seat at the table with ITIL. ITIL has recognized that there's some significant improvements to be gained through the principles of both of these. You know, being able to do small batches, iterative, and continuous improvement. These are all built into the framework, right? So Agile and DevOps aren't the enemy. They're actually helping modernize ITIL. They're helping bring a different take to how we can solve the same problems. You know, we're all on the same team. For today, I want you to focus on these two. So when we think about how value flows through the business when we connect Agile to DevOps, on the Agile side, it's really the link between design thinking and DevOps. So when you think about where does your product requirements come from, how many of you actually have product departments within your organization that have product managers that are focused on how you design your products, gaining the voice of the customer, and feeding that into your business requirements that drive your Agile teams? Right? Not a lot of people do. This is where Agile brings a lot of benefit, is helping gather the right requirements, making sure the products are being created properly, and that when they're sent downstream to DevOps, they help connect the business to the delivery of that software after it's been created. Mm-hmm. On the DevOps side, we're really helping bridge the line between a lot of these cross-functional teams. You know, Agile is created for us, whether it's through Scrum or through whatever methodology or frameworks that you've decided to use, and deliver something with quality that's built in, right? We can shift left all of these big gates that have usually been problems in releasing our software in the organizations into divesting those into small bite-sized pieces that we move to the left of the process, so that each and every step of the process as we go through our pipelines, we're actually able to accomplish a small piece of what needs to be done. So by the time we reach the gate, there is no gate anymore. Security works the same way with DevSecOps. How many of y'all have heard of DevSecOps? So this has been around mainstream for a few years. About 6 years it's lived in some form or fashion. So it's the same thing with security, right? We start taking all these gates that security is usually set at the end with their go and their no-goes, and we've said, okay, let's break it out and move security earlier into the pipeline to have discussions around things like, hey, do we pair security with an architect to ensure that when we plan for how the design is going to be made, that we're taking security in consideration? We even bring them all the way back to the beginning of sprints, and we partner them with people like product owners to say, are we prioritizing which of these would be the biggest risk to the business? Integrating security requirements into things like definition of done, definition of ready, acceptance criteria, right? These are all very valuable areas that DevOps and Agile work together. But we have to get past this whole, you know, I do one thing and these guys do something different, and it stops here and it gets picked up by someone else there, right? We want to create one continuous value stream. So like I've always been told my entire career is garbage in, garbage out. So if you have businesses that are already very chaotic, that have a lot of challenges about what you're doing and you don't understand what this process should look like, if you just start cramming automation into your organization and you're not doing the process properly and it hasn't been thought out, you haven't developed your value streams yet to define what that delivery of the product looks like, all you're doing is taking that garbage and you're automating garbage, which actually ends up causing more rework, more waste, right? It upsets your lean guys. It's going to upset your Agile teams because those sprints are going to be longer. You're going to build monumental amounts of technical debt. So what we want to do is we want to take a look at a few common scenarios that I'm sure each and every one of you have encountered at some point in time in your organization. So how many of you have heard when you go to talk to them about change, whether it be with Agile and DevOps, is that's not the way that we do things here? Or we do things a very specific way because this is how they've always been done. How many of you? Show of hands. A fair amount. So there's some progressive people here that have finally realized that, hey, doing things the same way we've always done them doesn't always yield the best results. Right? What the business is actually telling you is they're needing a reason for change. Right? That's not a technical problem. That's not even a process problem. That's a people problem, right? How are we motivating our people, inspiring them to say, go be brave, go make change, go propagate through other teams and talk about where these challenges are so that we can learn from each other. Right? So as I did a lot of research, I started seeing these little small patterns emerging of behavior of where a lot of organizations, like we were talking about earlier during lunch, they all have the same problem. We're all just trying to solve it in a different way. Another common challenge that I hear from a lot of people is, well, we're waiting on the transformation, or we're waiting on our team to change, or we're getting a new team member, or we're going to get this new high performer, right? How many of you have heard that on your team or heard that from your organization is, oh, we can't do anything because we're waiting for the change, whether it's an organizational change, a reorg, or a transformation is coming, or you're waiting for new team members that are supposed to give you new capabilities that you're waiting for? How many people? Quick show of hands. All right, so there's a few. So what this is telling you is that, you know, they expect change just to happen or to occur, and everyone's just sitting around waiting while work isn't getting done, which we're creating more waste. What about Agile being sprints or DevOps being tools? How many of you believe in your organizations this is how Agile and DevOps are viewed? DevOps is a CI/CD pipeline. Agile is Scrum sprints. None. That's impressive. I love that. I want to challenge that some of you may be not being honest, or there might be less Agile usage or DevOps usage than I expected within the group, but that's really progressive if that's the truth, right? This is generally saying that, hey, we just expect this to be classified as one thing and it's been relegated, so it's usually a precursor that businesses don't take their transformation seriously. They don't take the tools that they're being given seriously. And then finally, we're already doing ITIL, so we don't need Agile or DevOps because they're the enemy. Right, we've been here forever in this business, and now you're trying to change everything. Right? How many people have encountered that within your transformations or somewhere within your business? Once again, very impressive. I love this. Very progressive audience. So this is a very common challenge with a lot of organizations getting started, is ITIL is very well established, and DevOps and Agile are very new. So people are afraid of that, right? It's about that. If you think about the 14 management points of Deming, right? We want to drive that fear out of the organization so that people aren't scared to adopt something new. Right? Because Agile and DevOps is helping modernize ITIL. It's not trying to eradicate it or eliminate it or replace it. They all work together, and they have a multiplicative effect. So the more that you efficiently do one area or another, the more benefit every other framework, every other practice is going to gain from that. So here's what I propose. When we look at an approach within the business and we think about how we create feedback loops within the organization, we build improvements based on what we call camps. So how many of you are familiar with DevOps, John Willis, CALMS, or CAMS? All right. So we did some research with a consulting company that I was working with for a while, and what we found the problem with CALMS and CAMS was that if you roll people and your process into your culture, bad things happen. Because people get treated like processes, and processes get treated like, well, processes, right? So the people end up getting left out. So what we found was effective was taking lean and actually building it in at every step of the process. So when we talk about the culture, are we looking at places to remove efficiency or waste? Are we looking at it in our automation? Are we looking at it in the measurement of what we're doing within the organization? And then when we refine our processes, are we removing that waste? And then finally, as we share and communicate and collaborate with each other, are we taking the time to do it efficiently and in real time as possible? We also found that there were four areas of the business. There was leadership coaching that needed to be done, there was product coaching that needed to be done, Agile coaching, and DevOps coaching. And the reason that I don't put ITIL coaching in here is ITIL is much larger, and it's usually conforming of the entire business. So when the framework is adopted, the entire business is already bought in. You have change management systems. You have a lot of these other types of service management systems that have already been established. So what we want to do is refine some of those areas within the organization. So when we start from the left and we take a look at our leadership, we look at the culture of our leadership. Right? Are they bought in? But more importantly, do they stay continuously involved? Right? Buy-in, like I was talking to a few colleagues earlier, buy-in is a lot like an old-fashioned. Right? It requires a specific taste. It's a time-honored tradition, but it lasts for one glass and it's done. Right? So it's great. Your executives sign the piece of paper and they say, yeah, we're bought in. We want to do this. We'll send the complimentary emails and send a few things every once in a while. The problem comes because they aren't continuously involved. They can't adapt to the changes of the organization. When you start to coach through leadership, understanding where their problems are, we need to make sure that we're actually pushing that alignment down into our organization. So as priorities change, as the leadership starts to crystallize what the plan for the organization looks like, they have to maintain continuous involvement. It can't be a one or done. Next, we need to look at the business outcomes. Gone are the days of output. We don't just go buy a block hour or set of hours from a company and say, go build us a product and you will get it done in this amount of hours. We're looking for what the outcome is going to be. We're more understanding of time shifts or challenges that we have, and the business is more flexible in understanding the delivery is more important, the outcome is more important than the output of the teams that's creating it. And then finally, do our leadership teams have a growth mindset? So when we think about what leadership is doing, it's not always about directing. Are they listening to the company? Do they listen to everything coming from the bottom up in the organization? Those line managers, that's going to be where diamonds are made, or you're going to lose a lot of employees because everyone's going to feel like, I can't fit in here, because there's pressure coming from the bottom for change and there's pressure coming from the top down. So you have to have a strong middle management that's able to create feedback loops, and they're open, they're honest, and they're brave. Right? Then we take a look at how can we automate some of these things. When the business has needs, how do we create pipelines within the organization to make sure that we're automating those needs throughout each and every person that's going to be involved? Think of it like value streams for your management. Right? Do you find what those tasks look like when you communicate that a customer has a new need? How does that flow through your executive team throughout the rest of your leadership structure down to the people that are actually going to get the work done? Then we're going to measure it, right? Because if we can't measure it, we can't really grade whether we're improving or not. Not everything is easy to measure, but it's always important to try to measure it. Next, we need to create a process, right? We need to standardize it. We need to codify it within the organization. I'm not talking 1,000-page SOP books. What we've done in our organization as Equifax is we've defined, here are all the things that matter to technology within our group and how we work, and we actually created what we call an engineering handbook. And it is the codified version of everything that we believe and how we work. Everyone agrees to it. We certify every year, and they're tested and trained on it. It's part of the education system that we provide to our employees to ensure we're all on the same page. We're all marching toward the same thing, and we all understand the controls that we have to abide by. We do not dictate how to do their job, only what controls need to be met to do their job. And then finally, how do we share that with the rest of the business? How do we develop a plan that goes beyond comms, right? Beyond just publishing an email or publishing a broadcast or creating a document? How do we share what's going on? Right? How many of you in here are individual contributors within your organization? There is only a handful of people. All right. So how many of you in here are middle management leadership? Senior management leadership? Excellent. So how do you share the lessons that you learn with your peers, your subordinates, with even your leadership, right? How many of you have a good strategy right now that you could help tell me about where you know how you're going to communicate in near real time with each of your teams what your strategy is? So if somebody learns something, if you as a manager learn something with your team, how does someone else in another country within your company understand and learn from those lessons that you grew from? Right? It's important. Management, leadership is really critical in helping define that and how we're going to scale it across the organization. Next, we're going to take a look at product coaching. So, yes?
Can you go back and take it? You made a statement that I'm still trying to digest here.
Sure.
So you talked about a document or a set of documents, a book, essentially, that everyone had bought into. Is this like a set of policies that everyone's agreed to?
It's a practice. It started with common vocabulary. So the business said, well, we need to understand when someone says, what is an SRE? This is what an SRE is. And then we broke down even further to say, well, what are SREs responsible for? Oh, well, it involves OLAs and SLAs, and they have error budgets. What are the definitions of those things, and what are the constraints that the business has placed upon those so that everyone understands? So even if you're a technical writer, you should know what an SRE is and what their responsibility in the organization is. But we don't go into, well, this is how an SRE does their job. We may say, here are roles and responsibilities of the SRE.
And maybe policies and outcomes.
Absolutely, yes. And here, when he works on a team or she works on a team, and wherever they work on a team and however they work on a team, these are the desired outcomes of what their work does for us in the organization. This is the value they bring.
And you got everyone to buy in on that.
Absolutely, yes. So leadership pushed it, and everyone else actually bought in or bought in, and The contributions actually come from each individual within the organization, and we have an entire guild that works on vetting those ideas. So it's not just one person saying, this is something I believe needs to be there. We have an entire group across all of our alliances that say, yeah, we agree this is a need within our organization that needs to be defined. So it's a living document.
You have me at a leadership audit, essentially, in Ultra.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they're continually involved, right? Our CTO personally looks and reviews. So next, with product coaching, do we understand our customer? Right. So if we talk about the three horizons of products, when we develop products, do we know how we're developing them? Do we understand what the customer actually wants, and are we able to quantify that and write the requirements properly? Next, are we leveraging design thinking? So how many of you are familiar with design thinking models? Excellent. It's a little bit different than systems thinking. Right? It requires a different type of mindset, a different type of skill. But when we look at how we build things, you know, using rapid prototyping or innovation colonies within the organization, how are we vetting these ideas out to make sure that they're realistic before we just go slamming in a new feature request or another story within somebody's sprint? And then next, rapid experimentation. This is critical. So when we want to create new products, when we want to iterate on new products, when we hear feedback from our customers, we should experiment. We should be okay with saying yes or no based on actual data-driven decisions, not just going out there and saying, okay, that sounds great, let's do that, or someone's pressuring me with a huge amount of revenue, we need to make this happen, but actually experimenting it out and getting some idea of what that commitment is going to look like. And then as we move into agile coaching, now we need to really bind ourselves to those four values and 12 principles, right? So many times, you know, one of the things I love about DevOps is there is no manifesto. And it gives us that freedom to be able to move a little more easily through the landscape, whereas Agile is bound by that manifesto. And depending on the practitioner, they can be very hard and fast about it being a specific way. You know, some people don't believe it's Agile unless it's Scrum. Other people believe I've got to follow the manifesto to the line. There are other people that say, hey, you know, Scrum is just a guideline. Do whatever you want to do, whatever works best with you. Right? But if we follow those four valuables and those 12 principles, and we let the teams, through their autonomy, self-evaluate and improve, we're going to win. Right? We're going to hit the mark every single time. Next is, it's all about predictable delivery. We can mask it with any other word or name you want. Speed to market. Right? We can call it resilience. We can call it, you know, cloud, whatever. Right? You slap whatever brand on it. What wins in the market is predictable delivery. Anybody will tell you, even if you can get out there faster, even if you can do these things quicker, even if you can upgrade 100 times a week, if you could tell me exactly when I was going to be down and how much it was going to cost me and exactly when it was going to be back up, most businesses would prefer to have that than all the resilience in the world or all the speed to market in the world. Because you can't even dictate whether your customers are going to like the product that you got out to the market first. You can't dictate that just because your product is resilient that it's going to bring revenue. But if you know when your product's up, when it's down, when it's going to be controlled, and when you can actually release, and that will be in the hands of your customer, when those features are ready to be used by the people who are paying you money, that's golden. And then finally, the events and the activities. I see this as very flexible. The more rigid the events and activities get within a certain degree, right? You need to have the activities and the events, but don't use them as a club to beat your team over the head to say, oh, well, you didn't show up, so you're not part of the team, or, you know, find ways that the team can self-organize around the events and activities that work for them and stop trying to stamp it out across the entire organization the exact same way. The whole point of this entire flow is that we're using this as a tuning tool to ensure that each team finds how they work best. Because if every team is working at their level of efficiency, you will always have a better product at the end than everyone having to do exactly the same thing. Who in here is exactly like me? Point taken, right? And then finally, with DevOps, we're looking to try to increase the flow of work. All we want to do is be able to visualize what we have with Agile and be able to deliver it quicker, right? This doesn't have to be 100 times a week. It could just be building enough trust with the business that we can get to a place that we can go to pre-prod without having to have a ton of approvals, because our CAB board has noticed that there's a lot of value in being able to just allow automation to the organization. You know, I dealt with at a previous company, I won't share names because they would be very mad. But I had met with an ITIL practitioner, a very large fintech firm. And they said, hey, you can't deliver anything with DevOps without letting ServiceNow know. So anytime that you issue a change, you have to submit something to ServiceNow. And I said, are you sure that you want to do that? Because we had three high-performance teams on. They'll deliver 150 commits a day from their teams, right? Very honed TDD DevOps guys, right? So I said, are you sure? Because when we do this from dev all the way to prod, you're going to get a lot of emails with it. Well, we have to track every single change. And I said, I don't think your system handles that, right? Where's the trust being lost, and how can we build trust in the process working so that we don't have to just document it? Because an audit log is only good for the person that actually needs or looks at the audit log. You know, if we go through and we document every single thing that's happening, but there's never a problem, what's the purpose of documenting it, right? What's the value of the data that we're trying to record? So they said, nope, we have to have it. And I said, okay, not a problem. So I sent out an email that next afternoon. I said, by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, each and every one of your teams will insert this step into your build pipeline. And every time there's a build of your product and every time there is a deploy of your product, you will open up this ticket for ServiceNow. Within 14 minutes, 8:14, I get a call from the service manager. And they're like, shut it down. Shut it all down. You have taken down our instance of ServiceNow. It no longer responds because we're being spammed with so many updates and so many changes and so many commits. So I said, all right. We sat back down the table and once again had the conversation. Hey, where's the trust lost? How can we build that value? How through increasing flow can we show you that we deliver reliably? Right? And it just turns out that it was a misunderstanding. Hey, I don't know what a build is. Oh, well, there's nothing changing. It's just an artifact that's being generated. I don't need notification every single time that happens. What I care about is prod. What I care about is some areas of UAT or pre-prod. So when we identified those areas, things were fine, right? But we had to create those feedback loops and build that trust with the organization. Very challenging. So what we also noticed was we needed to amplify the feedback within the organization. So DevOps is doing a lot of things. They're automating a lot of things. They're changing a lot of things. The problem comes that they don't feed it back into the organization, right? These teams are really great at automating. There's containers and Jenkins and all that other good stuff. But then nobody has any idea what they're doing or where the value's at, right? And then we build all these little quick wins. And then what happens is that time, instead of being reinvested in our people becoming better at what they do, that time just gets reinvested in doing more work. And then that ends up dragging them down. And now you burn people out faster. DevOps actually helps you burn your employees out faster. What an interesting learn. And then finally, experimentation. Right, I can't stress this one enough. I know this feels counterproductive, and it doesn't seem as intuitive as what it is, but the more that you fail, the more that you learn. The more that you learn, the better competitive edge that you're going to have against your competitors, because all they're focused on is getting their products out the door. They're not focused on what they learn from it, how they refine their product, how they build something better that's more reliable, that's more stable. Right, so maybe they get to market before you slightly, but then your product is much more dependable. It's much more reliable. It's much more understandable. It's much well documented. Right, all because you took the time to do experiments. That one experiment may actually teach you. There was a company that I worked for. That one experiment that they ran ended up generating another $40 million in revenue because they found that this product could be broken into actually another product that fit a niche market of need that they had, that they were already developing an entirely new product, but they already had the code base for. So they literally split it. They cloned it. 2 weeks later, renamed it something, white box branded it, $40 million in their first year of revenue.
So, you know, this is a great way to build common cause with other business organizations like your marketing organization, right? When IT engages in a culture of experimentation, you're playing into things that your marketing team has wanted to do for 25 years.
Yes.
Right? And so you're basically bringing a new capability to your business organization that they will easily and very readily partner with you to. And
it will, absolutely.
It will absolutely.
Yep, it's about building that pipeline. Right, does everyone understand? They see how things should flow through the organization using this simple CAMPS method? So now we'll dig down a little bit. We'll start with leadership coaching. This one's super easy. So when we think about culture, we want to think about universal buy-in and continuous involvement. right? We want our leadership to continually be involved in what we're doing. When we think about it from an automated perspective, let's identify global redundant processes through Agile and DevOps, and let's reduce those. Next, with measurements, we can leverage things like KPIs or even OKRs. How many of you currently use KPIs or OKRs within your organization? And I highly recommend each and every one of you should have some type of goal indicator so that you know whether you're meeting your requirements and they're being measured properly. The next process, so focus from just the low-hanging fruit and look at the value in learning within your organization. Look at actually giving your people an opportunity to tell you what they see as wrong, what they see as value, and take that in consideration. Let's not just go knock out whatever task that we can for the sake of putting another check in the box or quantifying my velocities faster than yours. Stop comparing your teams. Right? Each team works differently, has a different set of people with a different set of lives, with a different set that drives them. We should treat them as individuals, not as one universal number versus each other. And then finally, sharing. Connect your stakeholders to the executors. Right? Implement incentive programs that matter. So many organizations I go into, I interviewed at this one company. They had an Xbox, they had a foosball table, they had this VR stuff or whatever. Crazy. I go in, and before I'm sitting in my interview, I'm sitting in this chair, and I see this guy passing by, and I said, "Hey, how long you worked here?" He said, 3 years. I said, "How many times have you played foosball? How many times you played the Xbox? How many times you played this stuff or whatever?" And he says, "I don't have time for that. I'm doing billable hours for the customer." And I said, "So if you just needed a break right now and you wanted to stop billing your customer and you want to go over and sit and play Xbox for 2 hours, would you be allowed to?" And he's like, "No, I have this many billable hours I have to deliver to my customer every week." I said, "Okay, why is all this stuff here? It's not valuable. It's just a front, right? Find incentives for your organization that matter and target the people you want to hire. If you want a culture that people can just get up and play Xbox for a couple of hours to de-stress, to be able to take a little bit of time for self-care, by all means, put Xboxes at every single desk if that's what you want to do. But don't put low-hanging fruit out there for people to go after and then alienate them from everyone else because it's not really the culture that you're actually driving. Product coaching. This is one of my favorite. How many people have seen this slide before? It rings true no matter how long I've seen it since the day that it's there. It rings so true that if you go to the website this was initially created on, you can make your own. You can add how many ever slides you want in there and change them to whatever you want. But I always find this interesting because this is where product coaching comes in. It helps you understand the voice of your customer. Right? Because at the very beginning here, how the customer explained it was a swing with 3 seats on it. I have no idea how that even happened, but they're doing the best they can to say, "This is what my dream looks like when it comes out of my head." Chances are your customers are not trained on how to elucidate complex ideas to businesses. They just throw money at them and they say, "We will pay you money if this existed or was available." So what we want to do is we want to actually go through and talk to all the different parts of the business and make sure we're all on the same page because this is what we want to deliver, right? What the customer really needs. Not what we think we heard the customer wants. Because what will happen is bad product requirements get put in. Developers develop products based on what they think they should look like and how they should feel. And then DevOps, they don't really care. They're just going to deliver whatever code that you create artifacts for. So next we're going to look at Agile coaching. So when we think about culture, we're going to look at the Agile mindset. Right? 4 values, 12 principles. Super easy stuff. With automation, just looking at automation testing, right? We want to reduce the WIP, right? What works in progress and how can we get that down? With measurement, we want to get beyond velocity and bug counts, and we want to start taking a look at things like how often do we pair? How effectively do we pair? How many of you are familiar with paired programming? That's not good. So all of you are very progressive companies that don't have any of these other problems, but you don't really practice paired programming. This is a core practice where you take two developers and put them together to help them solve the problem so that they learn better together. But we'll measure things like how much keyboard time do each of them have? You know, how many of them are answering and solving the problem? Who is more driven in the process? How are they pairing together? You know, is one person constantly doing? Because what this tells us is this guy the one that's always doing all the work? Is this guy always the one that's filling out the forms and writing all of the heavy code? Do we have other people that are just sitting back and sandbagging? Or do we have other people in the team that aren't getting the knowledge they need because this guy's trying to be a hero? Right? It'll tell you an amazing amount of stuff about your teams. Next, we want to look at process. Right? Keep focusing on process improvement to be effective. Super easy. That's what Agile is all about, is how can we iteratively in small batches improve the flow of work through this process? And then finally, sharing. Let's set up some activities. Think about the teams sharing knowledge across silos. One of the practices that we're getting ready to toy with over at Equifax is we're actually going to take marketing members, and we're going to take sales guys, right? We do documents now where we say, hey, here's an FAQ of things customers would ask, and here are the technical answers. But we need more than that. So we want to take a marketing guy, put him on the team with the developer. Let him see what it's like to go through a sprint, what it's like to deliver an increment of product to our customer, understand the struggles and the challenges they have. They may not walk away understanding Scrum. They may not walk away understanding Agile or any of the development lingo, but they see the pain. They understand what the team has to go through. They see how the team works together, and I guarantee you it will spark ideas that when they go back, now they're speaking in their language to their people about what they've learned. Right? And then we do the same thing. We take developers and we want to put them with marketing teams. Right? Because developers are too busy slinging code. They don't think about the punishment of what happens upstream and downstream of what they're doing, because all they need to do is write the code and test the code. So, and then finally, with DevOps. I really have a love-hate relationship with this diagram. I don't think this is a real accurate reflection of DevOps, but I'll touch on each of the areas so at least you understand. So culture is all about continuous learning through experimentation, right? We want to build cross-functional teams that can work together to make outcomes accessible to the entire business. With automation, we're trying to increase the flow by doing things like service patterning. So when we do something that works, let's create a pattern for it in the business so we can reuse it somewhere else and then propagate that to the rest of the organization. Build CI/CD pipelines. Everyone's pretty familiar with CI/CD pipelines, yes? Okay. Measurement. Let's make data-driven decisions based on technical and non-technical data that prime the feedback loops that we're creating with this organization, right? Not let's just measure the code. Let's just measure the velocity of output or if our release trains are going out on time. But let's look at the technical and non-technical impacts of our deliveries and draw some educated conclusions, right? Let's work with all of the stakeholders that's required in actually delivering an increment of value to the organization. With the process, let's iterate and optimize. But let's focus on accelerating software and infrastructure delivery, right? This is where we partner with Agile. They really do some really great things. And then finally, with sharing, we're creating real-time data feedback loops about the data-driven decisions that we're making. So finally, when we talk about bridging to business outcomes, anyone know where this picture came from? This is an aerial shot of a famous bridge. Yes, San Francisco. So this is actually the case. When the bridge was being built, it was so foggy, they couldn't even see 100 feet from where they were building the end of the bridge. How much planning do you think that took? Right? How much coordination and collaboration between everyone to create this bridge did it take in a dense fog to be able to continually build a bridge from one piece of land to another without even being able to see over 100 feet in front of you? Right? So when we think about this process, and I've given you these pieces where we talk about leadership and we talk about the product coaching and the agile coaching and the DevOps coaching, think of it like these towers here in the middle. This is your leadership, right? They're holding the bridge up. They're the guys that are backbone of everything that's going on right now, making sure that we've got spots in the ground to know where we're coming from and where we're going. And then you have these little suspension cables that join our leadership from the point where we're at to the point where we're going. And then think of Agile as your suspender cables, right? They're what's holding that weight, maintaining those variances and balancing the bridge and connecting it to the deck, which is DevOps, where we're actually delivering the cars that are going across the road, right? But it takes each and every one of them doing their jobs, being effective, and being strong in all of the parts of the bridge in order for a bridge to work together. It's pretty amazing. I read this crazy article about the amount of engineering that goes into actually creating bridges and how fickle bridges are during their design. Like, they're literally super dangerous while they're building them before everything is put together. But it takes a concert of everything working together once it's complete to make it exponentially stronger. So I want you to think about that from a multiplicative mindset. When we effectively deliver product coaching, leadership coaching, DevOps coaching, and Agile coaching within our organizations to work with our ITSM processes, we're gaining multiplicative benefits. It's not just Agile adding value to ITSM. It's the other way around, too, because we share a lot of the same values. And the same thing for DevOps. The same thing for product. There's a lot of value in thought diversity. Being able to approach things from a systems design or systems thinking versus a design thinking, there's value in both sides. So as we walk away today, these are a few key takeaways that I want you to think about. Right? These will spark some thoughts and ideas in you as you leave. So leveraging basic principles in Agile and DevOps is going to yield more results than just in IT. These practices that we have invested our lives into are more than just the technology department of our organization. These bring value end-to-end to the entire business. Right? We are far gone are the days of IT versus business. We are all the same team. We are all working to deliver the same outcomes. Next, you want to build a business pipeline to create end-to-end responsibility and use Agile and DevOps to optimize it. Right? So you have to have a value chain. If you think about ITSM, we talk about building that service value chain and all of the pieces that go along with it. Right? And then it talks about continuous improvement and all these continuous processes that have to go on with everyone you work with, suppliers, vendors, internal staff. Right? Use Agile and DevOps to help optimize those processes within the organization. And then leverage the CAMP methodology so that you can break down the operating silos and take more holistic approach to how you're going to determine and solve the right problems. This methodology helps you break down each piece of the business to find where the right problem is to solve. Right? We're not just here to deliver software. We're not just here to write software. We're not here just to create products. We're here to understand the end-to-end delivery of value to our customers. And then finally, each successful implementation of the four principles or disciplines provide a multiplicative effect to every other discipline employed. So when you have Agile and it stands alone by itself, it does a great job in one area of the business. When you combine that with DevOps, there's some overlap there. So both sides benefit. Now automated testing can be built into the teams, and we have features and roles and responsibilities within DevOps that can help deliver those things for Agile even quicker. Right? So now it's not just software being iterated. Now software is being delivered in those iterations just as quickly. And then we stack product onto the end of it. Now we have a solid, strong voice of the customer and a product that's actually been vetted out and understood before the first requirement is written. So now that we know it's been optimized, so once it reaches the backlog, there's quality that's already been built in, and you're designing and developing the right product for the right reasons to be delivered to your customer, right? Which equates to faster delivery, higher customer satisfaction. And then finally, having that continual leadership buy-in, right? Tying this all together, making sure they understand and they see the process from one end to the other, right? This is not just about Agile and DevOps doing what they do. The business has to be involved as well. They have to be able to see down to that level. There's not a great executive in the world that doesn't understand not only the technology strategy, but all of the moving parts it takes in order to accomplish successful technology. So finally, it's time for a little bit of a Q&A. I'd like to hear your questions or any challenges that you have, but I've left a QR code up here you can scan with your phone. It'll take you to a Hello World that'll give you anything and everything about me, who I am, what I'm connected to, any opportunities that you would like, as well as any credentials or code. I also open source everything that I do, so every presentation will be shared, and it's online. For the last 2 years, I've been doing that. So you can go out there and look at any other talks that I've had anywhere else that I've been. So feel free to share this with your colleagues or anyone else that you think may have value in it. I really appreciate your time. And anyone got any questions? Sure.
Just on Equifax, what what change type do y'all use for DevOps deployments?
So be more specific.
So change type should normal emergency failure.
Ah, okay. So there are a few different, because we have well over 3,000 products that we have to deliver across 24 different branches within our company. We have some teams that they work directly with change management. We have other teams that are integrated directly in through things like ServiceNow so that it submits the ticket to let them know. Our CAB approves it and says, hey, this change was good to go. We do have our SREs control most of that process, and we have some break glass in case of things like emergency changes, but we try to keep everything as expected as possible. And because those changes are so small, we don't have a lot of issues with having to go back and retrograde defects or submit a lot of emergencies. It's more of a, hey, we found major vulnerability or some other challenge within the market, maybe zero day, where we have to, you know, call that break glass process in order to make that change.
But the documentation of the change, the DLU standard change,
yes, for change. Yeah, we use standard change management through everything, and that is codified inside our engineering handbook about how those changes are handled. Anyone else? Sure.
I apologize if you could go to the last slide you were on. What were the four disciplines again, please?
Oh, the four disciplines. So we have leadership coaching.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Product coaching, agile coaching, and DevOps coaching. And I want to express this too, because this is a real big challenge not a lot of people want to talk about, but I see a lot, and it's silent resistance because of coaches. Right? Everyone feels like you're weak because you have to have a coach, when the truth is that we could all be better. We could all improve. And coaches also add a little bit of thought diversity to your business, because you're mired in what you do every day. You work in the company. That's what you do, and that's your single focus. A coach may be somebody who sits in a different part of your business, maybe an outside consultant, maybe one of your leaders coming in to engage with your team. But the point is to provide a different perspective. You know, someone on the outside will actually be able to tell you, like, I've done 29, Equifax will be my 29th transformation project that I've ever worked on. So I know a lot of what works and what doesn't work. I know where the BS starts and where the actual real value starts becoming delivered. That's not something you can just get from anyone, and it provides something unique to everyone that I work with. But when it comes to each and every individual product, there are 8,000 people in the company that know a lot more than I'll ever know about what we do. So it's my job to go to them and understand the product and communicate and collaborate with them before I can actually deliver some of that value. Just because it works one place doesn't always mean it works somewhere else, but we all have something great to bring to the table. So don't think because you don't have coach in your title, don't think you have to go buy a consultant. Any of us can be coaches. We can leverage our experience to help our peers become better at what they do, whether it's understanding our practice when we're across different practice areas, or whether it's just, hey, here's how we do things, and this is what has worked for us, to give them a different opportunity to understand a different way to do things. Fair enough. Anyone else have any questions? I can. All right, well, I'll hang out here a little bit before the next session starts. I really appreciate your time today, and thank you for coming out. Thanks, guys.